There's a couple of places in Scripture where you'll hear this phrase, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Does that sound familiar to any of y'all? Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's an interesting phrase because it's tricky for us to interpret because we have a different understanding of the word fear. We think be afraid. When this fear is really more respect the honor, the magnificence of God. Be awestruck is more the category of fear that's being identified there. But it's the beginning of wisdom. Understanding who God is, just like I've preached, I've only got three sermons, you guys. Right? And one of them is, God's God, you're not. That's good news. You've heard that. And recognizing who God is the beginning of wisdom. I mean, that's Job's story. Job is a book of wisdom, literature. It's about living life with that understanding of the magnificence of who God is, first and foremost. And then from that, an understanding of how to live the sins. So fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I don't know if you noticed this, but in Paul's letter to the Ephesians today, he talks a lot about wisdom and mystery. That same idea is at work there, too. What Paul says to the people in Ephesus is, you've had a way to understand who God is, but now this mystery has been revealed to you. Now, that doesn't mean that they understand it, but that means that they've had it delivered to them in the person of Jesus, the baby, in the manger. In Bethlehem. That's how that mystery has been revealed in this person. And Paul's saying to them, you've got this new avenue, this new way of understanding the magnificence of God. And it's not up there anymore. It's down here. It's in this manger. It's in a human being. It's in somebody like you. And so Paul really focuses in on that. But one of the beautiful things about Paul's letter to the Ephesians, and we saw most of the use of this word, which is in the book, the letter to the Ephesians, more than anywhere else in the New Testament. We saw it most in today's reading. The word mystery is there over and over and over again. Because what he's saying is, you have this new view for who God is, how magnificent God is in this manger moment, in this baby, in this human being. It's been revealed to you now. But the mystery never goes away. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fear of the Lord is how you sustain wisdom, too. That's how you stay smart. You don't supplant God. You don't misplace God. You leave God where God is. You let God choose God's place in the world and in all of what we know and can know. God goes first. And understanding that is the best way to then live into the world and to learn everything else you're going to learn. The Feast of the Epiphany, which is that moment when the Gentile part of the world gets to see God made manifest in a baby, in a manger, a human being at Bethlehem. By the way, anybody here with Jewish heritage? Good. I'm glad to know that. I'm not picking on Jews. What I'm saying is, this is our day. If we need to know who Jesus is, this is our day. This is the Gentile day. Epiphany is the Gentile get to know who Jesus is day. That's who the wise men were. They were foreigners. Okay? Isaiah would have them be from northeastern Africa and then other regions, too. I mean, we always have them coming from the east. We always have them coming from Abraham's homeland, from Ur of the Chaldees, from Persia, those sorts of places. Isaiah would have them coming from other places as well. And even the psalmist, if you hear that, even the kings of the islands too. I mean, these folks are coming from all over. We get three of them because they are representative. And Isaiah said something really interesting, though, that Matthew plays with. Isaiah says the camels are going to bring gold and incense. And then we sang about that. I love that little description in We Three Kings that we just sang. What the gold was for. That symbolizes the kingship, the lordship of this baby now. This is God's ruling among us. God as king on earth. And the gold is representative of that. I love that idea of it. There's other things that go with that too. It's kind of like making an investment. You give a baby lots of gold to start with, they should have more later. Okay? You give them lots of frankincense to start with, their prayer life should increase, not decrease. They shouldn't run out of this stuff. They should make it so that everybody else gets some of it too. That's what kings are for. Is sharing the wealth. Is making sure that there is a commonwealth, a shalom among the people. And so when the wise men bring gold to the baby Jesus, that's Matthew's way of telling us that they expect something good to come of this for the whole world. These riches aren't just his. They're his to give. We know that principle in our own lives. We use it when we apply love to our relationships. We don't hoard love and have more of it. We give love away and have more of it. The wise men give gold to the baby with the intentions that there's going to be more. Not in their minds. It's Matthew helping us see what can happen. And the gold turns into the world being blessed. And the frankincense is that other gift that Isaiah names and Matthew uses. Frankincense is the incense of prayer. Now, if we were good Epiphany people, we'd be swinging the thurible today, wouldn't we? Yeah, I'm sorry. And I like to tell folks that my job as a priest is to take whatever people's offerings are and to like they were turtle doves in the temple and put them on the fire and watch the smoke go up and say to them, the Lord loves your gift. Look how the smoke rises. So it's my job to make the smoke go up right? But that's the idea with incense, is that it is how we symbolize God's presence, prayerful presence with us. And we're joining in that with God. So frankincense is a way for God to be present prayerfully, spiritually, deeply in our lives. Gold, because it's abundance. Frankincense, because it's prayer going upright. And then Matthew takes some liberties, because Isaiah only gave him two elements to play with. Matthew adds a third element, myrrh. And we sang about it. You heard those words. Myrrh is the ointment, the balm that you use as an embalming practice. That's probably what the women were taking to the tomb. But Jesus, you know, he got raised. So they didn't get to apply it. But it was probably myrrh that they were going to use to embalm the remains of Jesus. That's what that was. And so that's that third gift. Matthew takes liberties, tells the story, but then bringing a third gift. And that's pretty obvious, isn't it? The Epiphany is a feast of the Incarnation. Number one, it's about how God is made manifest in the world, revealed to us now in this baby in a manger in Bethlehem, how all the magnificence of God is now present with us in a human person. And we see it in a way we've never seen it before. This mystery is revealed to us in this new way. But part of that mystery is that it's also one of us. And where that us goes, as beautiful as it is to see you guys here, young and fresh and smiling and bright eyes, you ready? You can tell your parents the other day and said this, you're going to die. Okay? Every single one of us. That's the other thing that marks us as incarnate, as humans ourselves. And Jesus is not immune. He's not relieved of that responsibility. He takes it on intentionally, obediently. And they bring him myrrh to help him with that. That's a gift to him. In the same way that each of these gifts, like love, gives more when it's given, expands beyond the giver, myrrh also says that there's something about his dying that is expansive, that takes this mystery farther than it's ever gone before. And so that's why the wise men show up like they do. That's why they do what they do. But hear this. God is still magnificent. God is still the God of the stars. God is still the God that shows God's self in the world such that people who don't believe like the Jews did, who don't believe like Christians come to believe, can still see God at work in the world. They can look in the stars and go, oh my goodness. God's fiddling around with stuff. We better check in on this. And they go. They gather and go. And they follow a star. Now, guys, I'm not an astronomer, but I'm pretty sure that the way Matthew describes it is a little bit off. Okay? Just a smidge. Know this, though, that astronomy back in those days was also more than that. It wasn't just watching the stars and doing calculations and figuring out how far or how close things were. Watching the stars was a way to find signs for life, to look at the stars and try to see your way. Now, we have probably diminished what they practiced back then, and now we call it astrology. That's a trivial version of what they were about. These people understood the magnificence of what they understood to be God, and the stars was one of the ways that they attended to that. They see something happening up there. They respond to it. Man, we ought to do stuff like that. But what do? We just get all neat and tidy and go to church on Sunday. Whew, glad that's over. There's something about this manifestation, this mystery made flesh among us now, that ought to move us. And I think Matthew gets to that idea too. I love it that he says, and they went home another way. They went home by another way. Y'all, that's fantastic. I mean, how else could they go home? Their lives were changed, for sure. And even if they didn't pick a different route, the travelers were different. They were different. Their way was different because they had been changed too. We can all use that as a role model. We can all take this moment when God's magnificence, I mean, just all that God is. I can't spread my arms out far enough. Okay? All that God is now focused into this manger, this baby, this human being in Bethlehem. And yet still, we miss something. What is it, you guys? What is it that we do that keeps us from seeing that? As that. But we do it, don't we? Oh, he's so precious. Look at that little baby. You know, we get down here with it. And we try to contain it. And be careful with it. And don't mess it up. Oh, Father Dan, you and your camels. Right? Y'all, I got to tell you too. Those camels, they're like dominoes. You get them close to each other, one of them tips. Boom, 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 boom. They're all down too. Okay? But those camels mean something because they are a way that we tell the story of this moment and that there are so many of them. That's the best way I know to symbolize that there's more going on than we can manage. Well, let's honor that. Let's look at this moment, be glad for it. Thank God for making the mystery flesh among us and then go home a different way. There's another part of this, though. Because this other way that they have to go home is because they have to deal with a darkness that's still in the world. As bright and as beautiful as the light is, as it shines from that manger in Bethlehem, as incredible a thing it is that God's magnificence is now among us, there's still darkness in the world, guys. Herod doesn't have homage in mind. We know that, right? We heard that in the story, and every single one of us is going, yeah, right. There's still darkness in the world. Part of how we need to go home differently is that we need to be seen as different by the world. That's why we tell that story today, so that we don't forget that it's not just about Bethlehem. It's about how the world hungers for that sort of blessing. And that it's our job to go home differently now. Not just from here, but from wherever you meet God in abundance, from wherever you meet God in your prayer life, from wherever you meet God as you are honest about your own life and its endings. All of those gifts can keep giving if we go home differently. Our ration.